Chat with Traders, episode 62.
The biggest secret of the best traders in the world is that they're just like everyone else. However, they've worked hard to learn the markets and discover what works and what doesn't. But how can you hear about these journeys and get in on the strategies and tactics they use? You can do it by listening to Chat with Traders. Here's your host, Aaron Fifield.
This episode of Chat with Traders is sponsored by Wonder Capital, an online platform that allows accredited investors to invest in large-scale solar projects across the US. Wonder's solar investment funds have targeted returns of up to 11% annually with no fees. For all the finer details, visit wondercapital.com/traders and create a free account. And note, that's Wonder spelt with a U. What's up, traders? Welcome to episode 62. For this episode, I spoke with Tracy, otherwise known as Shy Girl on Twitter. Tracy is a technical intraday trader, but also tracks fundamentals very closely. She solely focuses on the energy sector and has an obsession with crude oil. Yes, obsession may sound like a strong word, but you'll soon understand. During our interview, Tracy shares her story about how she up and left LA to chase her desire of becoming a trader, and how she wound up at a hack shop brokerage, which is best described as a scene from the trading movie Boiler Room. We also discuss the bear market of oil, the impact falling prices have on a macro level, the skill sets that have helped Tracy to survive and thrive as a trader, plus much more. And last thing, Tracy has kindly offered to answer any questions that you may have, whether they're about oil specifically or just trading in general. So go to chatwithtraders.com/62, scroll to the bottom of the page and write your questions in the comments area. All right, team, here we go. I'm your host, Aaron Fifield, and here is this week's guest, Tracy, aka Shy Girl on Twitter. Hey, Tracy, what's up? How are you?
Good. How are you?
I am doing very well. It's awesome to be speaking with you, and I think the timing for this interview is really good. Also, seeing as oil is all the hype right now, and that's pretty much the niche that you focus on. But before we get into what it's really like to trade a commodity market like oil, let's talk about how you got to where you are right now. So, Tracy, how did you get your start in the industry? And just for some added context, what were you doing before this also?
Okay. Well, actually, it's kind of a funny story. I was studying international relations with an emphasis on Middle East politics. And I thought I wanted to go to law school and didn't end up going to law school. So I took a job in sales selling medical supplies. And although it was great, I was traveling all the time. I hated it. I was living in Los Angeles, which was great. But I decided one day I wanted to get into this business. So I literally quit my job and moved to Chicago, because that's the place to be if you want to start in the commodities industry. And had never been there before, sight unseen, had no job, just went for it. Pretty much I knocked on every possible door. No one wanted to hire a girl, for sure. I had to beg for my first job, which actually was I started ground floor at a brokerage, which was pretty much you're straight out of Boiler Room, hack shop. In fact, they even got shut down by the NFA for something that happened long before I got there, by the way. But I had to beg for my job because nobody thought, you know, nobody wanted women. I was the only woman my company had ever hired. And I started there basically, you know, hacking away the 200 calls a day, asking mom and pop for 10 grand to trade options and futures.
Excellent. Okay, well, let's break this down a little more. So just backtracking a little, I actually understand that your father was also a commodities trader. Did this have any influence on, you know, your decision?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I had said it that, you know, I thought that with my background, with what I had studied, being that I didn't go to law school, that I could use that for I wanted to trade oil. So, you know, that was a good background for that. So my father was in the industry, so I was familiar with the industry. So, I mean, it wasn't like I just had no exposure ever to the industry or anything and decided to chuck my job.
Okay. And what was the decision that led up to you chucking that job? And like, did you reach a snapping point where you just kind of felt like this is it, it's kind of now or never?
Yeah. I mean, I just felt like, I was still young. But I was traveling all the time. I was living in a great apartment that overlooked the ocean in Newport Beach. And I was traveling, 5 days a week, and I was tired, and I was selling medical grade plastics, which if I can't tell you what a more boring subject it is to talk to somebody about medical grade plastics all day, every day. And I just burnt out. Literally, I just burnt out. And I decided that, I wasn't using my degree. I wasn't using anything that I liked. I wasn't excited anymore. And I just wanted to make a change.
Yeah, and I imagine that must have been a pretty big decision to just up and leave LA to move to Chicago at the time. So that's very cool to hear about. And also on that, why did you decide to try and get a job within the industry instead of just trading independently?
I wanted to learn from the inside out. I didn't think I was ready to trade right away. I had no clue about trading. I didn't want to take a bunch of courses. I thought the best way would be to get in the industry, try to get as near traders as I possibly could, and the industry. And working at, the Board of Trade every day certainly was that. And exciting. And, I worked my way from a broker to actually working on the trade floor. So for me, that was invaluable experience. And I just felt I wasn't, having no experience in the industry, I just felt that I wasn't ready to jump right in trading. Not that other people shouldn't do it. And, not that everybody has the opportunity to be afforded to move to Chicago and get in the industry. And this was also, at an earlier time. It wasn't this day and age where, brokers, you don't really need a broker anymore. Everybody's with a discount broker. You have to remember this was kind of a lot earlier when people still had brokers and whatnot. So it was kind of a little bit different back then.
Okay, sure. Now that makes sense. So from the hack shop broker that, as you described it, where did you go next? Did you go straight onto the Chicago Board of Trade? I think you kind of mentioned that there. What was the next step from there?
My next step was I moved to a broker that was actually a really well-known broker. And then from there, I moved to the trade floor, and I clerked for a trader who was in Fed funds. And then when market crash and rates went to zero, we moved to the grain floor because there was really no business left to be had in Fed funds. And then I was head of the trade desk there. So I kind of moved from clerk to head of trade desk in the grains room, and then we moved over to the bond room.
Okay, excellent. And I know you've got a very interesting story which you might be able to share with us, or maybe I should say a kind of a frightening story. I'm not sure whereabouts it fits on your timeline, but I believe that you wrote the wrong order on a trade ticket one day. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Oh, that was at a brokerage. That was like one of my first trades. That happened several times on the floor, not by me though, but I had just started, and it was an options trade, and I had written that there's a specific way to write the trade. You send it, and this was before you really traded options on screen. Like, the liquidity just wasn't there, so you still called down to the floor. Like I said, this was kind of back in the day. You'd have to write the ticket. You send it to the guy. The guy calls the floor. Put your order in with the floor broker, the broker executes it. And so I, being brand new, wrote down the order backwards. And it was my first crude trade, actually. And this is when I fell in love with crude. And it ended up that the trade actually ended up becoming a $30,000 winner from a loser. And, I kind of just held my breath on that one, not that it was probably a good idea, but I was brand new, scared to death to call the client, scared to say, I wrote your order wrong, because really writing the order wrong means you're responsible. That means it comes out of my paycheck. So I sweat it out, and it ended up to be a $30,000 winner for the guy. So.
Okay, so lucky enough, it did result in a profit. But at what, like, how much were you down during the trade at the worst of it?
At the worst of it, I was down like $5,000. But you have to understand, it was one of my very first trades, and $5,000. You know, I was thinking, how am I ever going to make $5,000 to cover this trade?
Okay, sure.
You know, literally it was like right at the beginning of my career. And it, you're working on commission only. So I barely had any clients. You know, I was sweating. It wasn't the smartest decision to make in the world. It just, you know, it ended up well. And then after that, I completely fell in love with crude, and I've been trading crude ever since.
Excellent. And we're going to spend quite a bit of time on that. I've got a bunch of questions that I'm keen to ask you around, you know, oil commodity markets. So I'm just, before we get into that, I'm keen to hear a little bit more about your role as head of a trading desk on the Chicago Board of Trade. Can you tell us a little bit more about that role and maybe like any challenges you experienced going from the position of a broker to becoming a trader?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was head of trade desk. So basically what we did is we were basically a floor broker. So we executed, but instead of for retail, we executed for hedge funds like SAS and whatnot. So I was dealing with not retail anymore, which is nice. So they would call us. We would give them trade recs, or they would call in with their own trades. I would give them then to the broker. Who would execute them on the floor. So it was basically a foray. It was kind of in the middle between being like a broker to, you know, sort of trading because, you know, we also had trade strategies and things that we had to give to these people. And you're on the trade floor, which is very exciting. Even when it started to dwindle down, I left in 2012, I mean, it's still exciting to be on the trade floor. I'm not going to lie. It was super exciting. You know, every day was a new day. Everything is moving so fast. There's so much room for error, but yet everything works like a well-oiled machine. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, no doubt. I imagine it would be a very cool environment to be working in every day. So what actually led to your decision to go out on your own and trade independently like you do these days?
Well, the floor was kind of dying, obviously, and so I was trading crude on the side, you know, just in my own personal account, like a small account, you know, startup, because I, you know, got more used to trading and more comfortable, and I, you know, trading options and started trading futures during, you know, the downtimes on the floor. So then my actual next step was instead of going out on my own, I actually got a job with a prop firm, which I highly recommend if you can get a job with a prop firm to any new trader. If you don't have an account large enough or if you want to be a funded trader, it's a really good experience because it forces you to be really focused and not to do stupid shit. Really, because you're accountable to somebody else and you're trading somebody else's money and you have somebody always looking over you and you know they're monitoring, you know, every trade you make. So I think it helps you become a little more disciplined in your trading if you're a brand new trader and you can afford, you know, you have the opportunity and you don't have, you know, the funds to fund your own account, basically. So, you know, after I outgrew that sort of experience. It's kind of when I went out on my own.
Excellent. Okay, well, let's talk a little more about your actual approach to markets that you're trading today. So could you give us an overview of your approach and the type of methodology that you've adapted?
Sure. I mean, I'm a technical, I would guess what you would define as a technical trader. I trade technically intraday, but I also have a solid knowledge of fundamentals. Because I think, and some people will disagree with me, but I think trading the oil market, I think it's invaluable to know, to have that fundamental knowledge of what is going on and to be able to trade it, to either swing trade it or day trade it. Like I said, some people will disagree with me. They can just trade on technicals. They don't really care about fundamentals. that's fine. It also happens to be a passionate subject of mine. So I like to know what's going on in the market, who's doing what, who's saying what, you know, because you hear just the best example of recently all these OPEC rumors, you know, oil is up not because of anything other than OPEC rumors, right? So it's kind of nice to know, like, what is going on, who is saying what, what's possible, what's not possible, who's producing what. So I kind of trade with a combination of both fundamental and technical analysis, although I do intraday trade solely based on technical analysis. Like, I have certain levels and things that I trade off of. I have a system. I make the same trades over and over again. I mean, what I tell my students is, here are the levels. What you want to do is you want to get in the habit of making the same trades over and over and again. Make it a system. Make it so it's a no-brainer, because your worst enemy is always going to be your head, right? Like, you're going to find a million reasons not to make the trade, and you're not going to make the trade, especially if you're new, right, because you're scared. So if you come up with a system and you just make the same kinds of trades over and over again, even if they don't work, what you do is you're making high-probability trades. If they don't work, they don't work. It happens. No big deal. You have a tight stop. Okay, move on to the next trade. But if they're high-probability trades, you have the system, then you kind of leave, like, your brain out of the picture. Not that it's not ever completely out of the picture, not that you're not going to second-guess yourself. But, you know, I try to have a system that I will always take this trade, period.
Okay, that's excellent. So what are some of the things that you actually look for? Like, what are some of the components of your system, like, some of the opportunities that you're actually trying to capitalize on?
Rotation levels, Fibonacci, volume profile, and footprint is kind of how my system of trading. Because I pretty much want to know. I want to know where buyers and sellers are, actual buyers and sellers in the market. And that's pretty much a lot of that's coming from working on the trade floor. You know, where are buyers and sellers? Because you didn't have computers on the trade. I mean, you have a computer in front of you, but in the pits, you don't, you know, who is buying, who is selling, and that, you know, reflected electronically. But so I want to know who's buying, who's selling, where are their gaps, where is, you know, if you follow me on Twitter, you'll see I post a lot of TPO charts where I say, here's our singles here. This is the market's going to go fill those, because that's what the market likes to do. The market likes to balance itself.
Sure. Okay. So what's the reason why you've decided to purely focus on one market?
I just fell in love with the market, or, you know, in all respects, fundamentally, technically, and maybe I'm a glutton for punishment. I mean, nobody trades crude for 10 years, right? Only. I mean, I do throw other things in there, by the way. I have, at one point or another, traded pretty much everything, like, including oats. So I have traded everything. At one point or the other. But my mainstay has always been crude. And I guess it's just because that's where my passion is. I mean, I guess you just have to find where your passion is. Some people can trade a million markets at once. Personally, I find it impossible to trade more than two markets at the same time.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's a great answer, and it totally makes sense. So if I'm correct, oil futures trade, I think it's 23 hours a day. How do you trade this? Are you active during a single block of time, or are you up trading kind of around the clock?
It really depends. I don't trade Asia just because simply the liquidity isn't there. And you never know. Somebody could throw a 50 lot in there and it's going to move them. It's just too it's too unreliable as far as, you know, how it moves. Again, because the liquidity isn't there. A lot of times during Europe, you'll have some great, really nice moves. They don't have as many algos trading in that session. So for newer traders, I would say sometimes, you know, that market can be, or those times could be a lot easier to trade. Not easier, but a lot of the noise isn't there that's in, say, the U.S. session. So sometimes if you want to trade a product like crude, which is pretty manic, right, and it moves really fast, my suggestion would be, you know, start with Europe time or start with a mini contract, is what I tell people, because it really, I mean, it's a fast-moving market, and sometimes, you know, it can wipe out your subs. It's really something like I've watched it for 10 years and I still learn something new every day in the market.
Okay. So how much time, just on average, would you say you spend in front of the screens trading oil markets each week?
Probably too much. I mean, I love it. You can be a profitable trader without spending as much time as I do. I'm kind of a market junkie. So, I mean, we'll see. I get up to see the Europe open. I'll get up to trade it if I think there's a trade there. So, I probably spend a lot of time in front of the market.
Okay. So much more than your average worker would during the week.
Yeah, probably. I mean, my work week is, 120 hours plus.
Wow, okay. So would you say that's maybe partly the reason why you've been so successful at trading is because it's almost like an obsession for you?
I think it is. I mean, when you have a passion about anything and you really enjoy it, then I think that's going to make you successful no matter what you're trading or what you're doing. You don't have to spend this much time in front of the screens. I just happen to love it. And you really get a feel, if you watch it as much as I do, you kind of get a feeling of how the market's going to react, where, when, because you've seen it before, and there's really no explanation why. You just know the market's going to react that way. And a lot of that just comes from experience, which is why for newer traders to have a system is very, very important, I think. Have trades that you make all the time, keep the guesswork out of it. 10 years later, go with your gut. That's fine, but not at the beginning.
Sure. So, Tracy, I'd like to sort of dig in a little bit more about the fundamentals and the politics. So you mentioned that some people might not agree with you that, this is an important aspect to understand when you're trading markets such as crude. Why are the politics and fundamentals important to you, though?
Well, it's important because I like to know, especially as a day trader, what is going to make the market react. I'll just use the latest example, which was on Friday. We still have this huge glut of oil. Nothing's changed fundamentally. Everybody's still overproducing, blah, 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 yet the market goes up. Well, I followed my oil ticker. I knew the second that it hit that there were problems in Iraq and Nigeria, and they had pipelines that went offline, and then now it was, 2 seconds later, they were going to be offline for 2 weeks, removing about 800,000 barrels of oil from the markets for the next 2 weeks per day. So immediately, I'm looking for long. Is this market, this market's oversupplied, this market, so right now, I think we could get a squeeze, this market could go higher, but ultimately, the fundamentals haven't changed. So the higher we go right now, the harder we're going to fall.
Okay, that's interesting. So just a couple questions off that. Where do you get the majority of your information from? Like, do you find there are certain resources which are more reliable than others? And the second part, if traders new to oil were to only focus on just maybe a few numbers or a few types of fundamental information, what would you say perhaps has the greatest impact?
Literally, if you follow, Live Squawk, Squawk Box, or subscribe to any of those just for their oil, that is great. I know this sounds, and people don't believe me, but EIA and IEA, which are just the government websites, are full of so much information that people completely tend to think, oh, it's just a government agency. There's nothing there. There is so much information there. It's an invaluable resource, both of them. Especially EIA. So it sounds, most people are like, it's government agency. There is so much information there. IHS is another good resource that you should definitely look at. All these people have things like refinery maintenance schedules, who's producing what, detailed about what refinery is refining what, how much is coming out of each zone, more information than your brain can possibly handle. So for new traders, you want to know fundamentals, start there. I mean, it's the obvious place, but really invaluable. Look at the information. Look at, you know, I guess you have to be your own judge, but I mean, you should know what's going on within the market. And if you don't want to do that, you can just follow my Twitter stream because I tweet every day and all the pertinent information, not to promote my Twitter stream. I'm just saying.
Let's take a brief moment now to thank our sponsor for this week's episode, who is Wonder Capital, an innovative fintech company changing the game for how commercial solar projects are funded and how accredited investors achieve strong returns. Using the online investment platform at wondercapital.com/trading, individuals can earn up to 11% annually investing in Wonder's 2-year fund and up to 6% annually investing in their 10-year fund with zero fees. Both asset-backed funds are fully managed by solar specialists, so you're not required to be an expert in the field to catch some of the upside. To learn more about how it works and to join thousands who are already doing well and doing good, visit wondercapital.com/trading now. And just remember, that's Wonder spelt with a U. And like always, you're responsible for your own investment decisions, so please do your own due diligence to decide if this is appropriate for your risk tolerance. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, falling prices in oil. You know, they've been falling over the last year or so. As we all know, you know, they've been on the decline for quite some time. What do you believe has been the underlying reason for this?
The underlying reason is it's completely a supply issue. That's it. It's over, we're oversupplied and we have not enough demand. I mean, it's very simple. It's more simple than anybody thinks it is. It's really an oversupply issue. We're oversupplied. That's it. We're completely oversupplied and nobody, it's a game of chicken. Nobody wants to stop pumping, right? So you have the Saudis and OPEC and you have the U.S. shale and nobody's going to stop no matter what. And even though this rig count thing, which anybody that follows me knows, is my pet peeve of all times because just because my theory is rigs don't produce oil, wells produce oil, right? So even though rig count's down, you can't the price of and the technology is so fluid in the shale market right now. Like advances are being made all the time with horizontal drilling and things like that of that nature. And this is what I'm saying. You should know the fundamentals, and you should know rig counts, you know, eventually they will matter. You know, if we get to zero and nobody's drilling, nobody's drilling. But, you know, as rig counts have been going down, it really hasn't done anything to production levels so far. And that's because you have to know that ongoing technology makes this number very fluid and break-even numbers very fluid. So, you know, that's another reason why knowing your fundamentals is really important, because you would see normally, you would say rig counts are down how much? Shouldn't oil be skyrocketing right now? Shouldn't production be way down? No, you have to know really, you know, how fluid these numbers are, especially in the shale industry. You have to understand that shale is a relatively new technology for the U.S.
Okay, so what impact would you say falling oil prices have on a macro level, and what's been the roll-on effect to companies that are involved in the oil industry?
Falling oil prices are good for the economy. Everybody considers them a tax break. At these levels, however, we're at dangerously low levels. They are no longer good for the economy. They are no longer good for oil companies. Right now, we have a huge debt problem. We have 40 bankruptcies last year. We have 175 bankruptcies possible this year. Debt reconsiderations are in April. So we have this massive debt problem. If these companies go out of business, what goes out of business with them? Restaurants, housing, blah, blah, blah. It affects all sorts of sectors of the market, not just the oil industry, when these companies start to fall. So it's a massive problem. It's no longer good for the economy. It's no longer a tax break. In fact, you know, there are a million Fred studies that show that people aren't using savings in oil, you know, to go spend on other things. They're using savings in oil to pay down their credit cards or save money. It's not, you know, the theory was we have savings in oil. It's a tax break. These people are going to go out and, you know, go buy more clothes and go spend it on the economy, and we're going to revive the economy, and it's all going to be great. But that's not what's happening in reality.
Okay. And as, you know, as the speculation continues, are prices going higher? Are they going lower? Where do you stand on this? Do you speculate, or do you even care on where oil is headed in the long term? Or do you just sort of trade what's in front of you here today?
I trade what's in front of me here today. I do speculate only to the extent that I'm never going to call a top or bottom on any market, because the market will just make you look stupid in the end. So I'm never going to call a top or bottom. Do I think that this market is done? Do I think we have a bottom here? No, I don't. Do I know where the bottom is? No, I don't. I don't even want to venture to guess where the bottom is. But knowing all the fundamentals of the market, talking to people that actually trade the physical, knowing, you know, inside information, fundamentally wise, I would say that, you know, we could have a squeeze here. Oil could, you know, oil could go to 37, 38, and still I wouldn't call it a bull market. Until we break 44, 45, we're still in a downtrend. And as everybody knows, I'm still bearish on this market. Even if I will trade the long side during the day, like, you know, as a day trader, looking at it, I'm trading what's in front of me. So I'll trade long and short, sometimes both in one day. But as an overall macro view, looking at it as, you know, just speculating on the market, I would say this market is not done yet to the downside.
Okay. And what is it about the 44, 45 level in you that thinks if it breaks, if prices break those levels, then we are potentially in an uptrend from that point?
Because constructively on a chart, if you look at a chart, if you look at a 20-year daily chart, that's when you finally really start to see recover, like when you really break the downtrend.
Okay. And just on this note still, what type of events or what do you think would might need to happen for oil market to turn around to the upside? Like what would turn it around?
Well, let's back up a little bit. Okay, March is refinery maintenance season. So what we're going to see during March is a lot of builds in crude oil. That's why I think it's not done. If we are going to ever see any kind of price recovery this year, it's going to be, you know, end of April, beginning of May, end of Q2, beginning of Q3, because at that point you have debt reconsideration. So, you know, if these companies don't get more money, they're not going to survive and they're going to go bankrupt, which means that production is going to go way down. And then you have summer driving season where you have demand. It's a seasonal trade. Demand is normally up during summer driving season. So with those two happenings together, that could create a nice little spark to at least have some recovery in the price of oil. But, you know, it's all depending. We've got to see what happens in April.
Okay, and just on that, with the debt considerations, do you have any numbers that you might be able to share with us to show or to help us understand maybe how serious this situation is?
Well, unfortunately, the banks have been less than transparent in, you know, we just had earnings season, right? And, you know, oil debt is something that they have to talk about. However, they haven't been very transparent as far as how much debt, where, when, and how. It's kind of, they've been very closed about it. So I wish I had some better numbers for you, but it's been so, my gut feeling is these banks are trying to hide how much debt exposure that they have to these markets because they want to save their stock price. So I think they're afraid to sort of expose that. So they haven't been very forthcoming in where all this debt is. And, you know, they keep saying, we've already considered losses up to $1 billion. But I think their exposure is way higher than what their expectations are for not recouping this loss. Not to be a Debbie Downer, but I'm just saying, if you're less than transparent about something, what are you hiding, right? So.
Yeah, absolutely. That does make you wonder. So are there any words of wisdom that you have for less experienced traders who are keen to start trading oil, just to kind of summarize what we've discussed here?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to start trading oil, do it. It's the most exciting, fascinating market ever on the planet. But, you know, definitely talk to people, ask questions, ask people on Twitter. Twitter is an invaluable tool, I think, because, you know, you can talk to experienced traders and, you know, unless they're dicks, they're going to answer you. I mean, I try to answer anybody's questions. All of my friends that are, you know, veteran traders do the same thing. So ask questions. You have an invaluable tool. You learn all you can. Find a mentor. You know, find a prop firm. You know, use all the tools that you can. I'd also say, you know, sim a lot before you just jump in. And maybe start with, you know, the mini contract, or definitely try to find a system that works for you, because crude's great at, well, any market is great at faking you out. So, and get losing money at the beginning. Don't be afraid to lose money.
Absolutely. Small amounts of money, ideally.
Right. But that's what I'm saying. I mean, there's a lot of resources available. Don't go online to those schools. I know other people will kill me that they're selling their school crap. I'm not selling anything, by the way. I'm just here to, you know, talk to you.
Absolutely. No, and that's great.
But, yeah, I mean, ask people questions. I think Twitter is an amazing resource, and the fact that, like I said, I mean, you have veteran traders there, and unless you're a complete dick, you could ask anybody anything, and they'll answer, at least the people I know.
Yeah, I think Twitter is such an awesome resource, and I've been saying this for a while now. I think every trader should be on there really making the most of it, because you just have access to so many great traders. It's
right?
Really cool.
And they'll
like
answer
that.
You, and they'll be, like, you know, way cool about it, even if you're, you know, you're the guy with, you know, two followers and, you know, whatever. Nobody, you know, traders don't care. You ask a legitimate question, they're going to answer you. Before, you didn't have access to traders like that. It's not like you could, like, call up Ackman and be like, hey, dude, right?
Exactly.
On Twitter, you can.
Yeah. So, all right, last question just to take us out here. And I kind of asked you it a little bit earlier, but let's expand on it a little bit more. What skill sets have made you a successful trader? So you mentioned obsession. Is there anything else?
Patience. Here's what I find. People, especially new traders, they think, I want to get in trade. I need to be in a trade all the time. I got to be trading all the time. I make 3 to 5 max trades a day, day trading. I have a swing account too. So, you know, you don't need to be trading all the time. You don't need to be in the market all the time. You have to wait for the market to come to you. Have your levels, have a system, wait for your market to come to you. Trading is boring. Most of the time I'm on Skype, you know, talking about the markets to people. I'm not in a trade all the time. You don't need to be in a trade all the time. If you're in the trade all the time and you're making 60 trades a day, you're over trading and you're not going to be successful, because at that point you're just paying your broker.
Yeah, yeah, great advice. And you hit on an interesting point there. You said have a swing account also. So do you have a separate trading account for your intraday trades and your swing trades?
I do. I have 2 accounts. So I find that I have one for swing trading and one for day trading. So I find that that's a great thing to have, because I can, you know, have a swing account, not care about the intraday swings, but yet then trade against my own position day trading wise. So once you get to that level, I would recommend, if you want to swing trade and day trade, have 2 separate accounts where you can make swing trades. And then you don't really care, and you have your in, you're out, you're not worrying about it. And then you can do your day trade scalping, whatever, in another account.
Yeah, and I guess that would make things very black and white for, you know, to track how you're doing with your intraday trading and how you're doing with your swing trading. It keeps them both separate and very tidy. So, now that's excellent, Tracy. Now, where can listeners go to find out more about you? You've mentioned Twitter, so what's your Twitter handle?
I'm on Twitter at ShyGirl, ShyGirl, because I was from Chicago, so that's why.
Great. And, Tracy, I didn't ask you this before we jumped on the call, but would you be open to answering questions that any listeners may have in the comments area of this interview?
Absolutely. I would be more than happy to answer any questions.
Cool. Okay, so guys listening, if you have any questions for Tracy, go to chatwithtraders.com/62, scroll to the bottom of the page and leave a question in the comments area, and Tracy will get back to you on that. So make sure you take advantage of that. Tracy, thank you so much for doing this. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. Let's stay in touch.
Thanks, Aaron. Yeah, definitely.
You've come to the end of this episode of Chat with Traders, but don't worry, more great episodes are on the way. To stay updated with each great new episode, be sure to subscribe to the podcast in iTunes, and we'd love it if you leave us a rating and review. We'll see you next time on Chat with Traders.